I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Thaddeus McCutter, American greatness, former member of Congress from Livonia, the great state of Michigan, to help me understand the politics of the moment between the Trump administration and our neighbor, our friendly neighbor, as one wag puts it, the nicest people on earth, Canada, to the north, following decision by the Trump administration, and we're told the president and his counselors personally, to break off or walk away from or make impossible to continue trade negotiations with Canada, especially Prime Minister Mark Carney, and then issue a document or a threat that 50% tariffs will be visited upon all products coming in from Canada. Canada has responded variously, chiefly unhappily. And there's great upset. And I'm told by talking to a colleague of mine, Conrad Black, who's in Toronto and is often on air, television and radio in Canada, that there's a special alarm because it's been possible to view, I'm not quite sure what the graphic is, the White House or its presentation making a map or a drawing or some outlines treating Canada as a 51st state. This conjoined with Mr. Trump's, I guess he thinks, witty turn to call Mark Carney not the prime minister but the governor of Canada. Inviting Canada in is not quite worthy of being a sovereign power. All very strange. The facts are about the trade talks. They're broken off now, and there's genuine anger and upset everywhere. I asked Thaddeus's help because there's political dimension about all of this, especially in Michigan. But first, Thaddeus, what is your opinion of the break-off of this negotiation? Was it always going to happen? Was Mr. Trump in some fashion signaling this with that, what is called trash-talking about 51st state? Is this something that had to happen? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. I don't know that anything has to happen. I think that the 51st state remark was most unfortunate for almost all involved. It was certainly not unfortunate for Mr. Carney because I think it helped propel him in the polls and into the prime ministership. If you recall, the conservatives were very much, the winds were favoring them very much in Canada. And when the 51st state remark came about by President Trump, it certainly dashed their chances and increased those of Mr. Carney. So I think that it was unfortunate for all involved, really, because Canada, if you think about all the trouble that we're putting into securing the southern border, there's no point in causing problems with our northern border at the same time. And I don't know that the Canadians, who are very proud people, are going to respond well to this. And they haven't, nor should they.
All the families I know in Maine have families in Canada or were from Canada at the same time. Is there a similar group in Michigan who were Canadians and are now living in Michigan?
We have a lot of cross-border traffic of people who work in hospitals or nurses. We have a lot of people who work in other industries that go back and forth. We have a lot of intermarriage. Just growing up, one of my father's and mother's friends was a fireman in Detroit. His wife was Canadian. When we moved in to our first home in Livonia, the neighbor down the street, his wife was Canadian. It's not uncommon. There's a lot of crossover here, especially as you head further north. So I don't think that it's certainly an unfortunate situation, John, and I think it's probably the same in Alaska as well.
Yeah. We move to the politics of this. We'll deal with the House in just a moment. That's a moving story about how many purple seats there are. But in the Senate, there are three Senate races that are surprisingly now in play. Maine, Susan Collins, on the Canadian border, as Thaddeus and I just discussed. Michigan, Mike Rogers and Dr. Al-Sayed competing for an open seat. Because Gary Peters is stepping down, the Democratic senator, senior senator stepping down. And in Alaska, two Sullivans running. I know least about that. I'm going to concentrate on Maine and then as Thaddeus' help with Michigan. Susan Collins is a veteran legislator from the great state of Maine. She has great and deep connection to the people, especially of northern Maine. And she's always been available and understood in Maine to be nonpartisan. The other senator from Maine, Angus King, is an avowed nonpartisan who caucuses with the Democrats, but is neither this nor that. Maine is like that. The southern part of Maine has a lot of influence from Massachusetts. People move into Maine when they retire and has more of a Democratic vote, but not the north. Now, the county, that's Aroostook, used to be known for potatoes. Now it's just known for vacation homes. And if you have one there, you're lucky. And all of the counties in the north lean to Susan Collins, not to the Republican Party, but to Susan Collins. And yesterday she had scheduled a meeting with the vice president, Mr. Vance, who flew in to boost her chances in the race. She's running against an unknown to us, to me, Troy Jackson, who was a former legislator in the state house. I think he was leader of the state senate, but has stepped aside from being a politician, but now is back in as the nominee following a failure to promote the candidacy of someone who was caught deceiving the public previous to this event. So Susan Collins was happy to take on a relatively weak, comparatively to the previous candidate, Troy Jackson. And now when the vice president flew in, I was surprised to see, everybody was, that Susan Collins didn't attend the event. She stood up the vice president. And later on, in an event of her own, she talked about the Trump administration and the decision about the tariffs. But she didn't mention the vice president's name, nor that he'd flown to Maine to support her. The best that Mr. Vance could do afterwards when asked was, she's always been of an independent mind, which, of course, is good political talk for Maine. But Thaddeus, this is a ruinous start to a campaign strategy. I know that it will remain tight the whole time because Troy Jackson doesn't light up any candle. However, clumsy, to say the least, and it suggests that Susan Collins was blindsided by the decision by the president, or they ignored her, or she's on the outs with them, or they'd prefer another one. How do you read this?
How I read it is she was blindsided. She's very upset. She knows that it's going to be detrimental to her campaign, as does Mike Rogers, and I believe Senator Sullivan probably does as well. It's not going to help. The economy is the big issue. And when you do things that are going to directly impact negatively the economy of swing states like Michigan, states like Maine that have an incumbent Republican, or Alaska that has an incumbent Republican in tight races, every little bit helps, and this is a large sledgehammer to their chances. And it's being wielded by a Republican president. So I think that they were caught off guard. I think a lot of people were caught off guard. And the politics of it, I'm not quite sure what he hopes to accomplish at this point in time. Certainly one of the things that may happen is it may backfire, as we were talking. The original 51st state remark helped to propel Carney over the conservatives in Canada. And unfortunately, this talk about 50% tariffs and may very well boomerang and help elect Democrats without securing anything economically.
My understanding is, well, Mike Rogers, let's speak well of Mike Rogers. He's a longtime member of Congress, no longer in Congress. He's independent now, but he ran previously for the last Senate seat, I believe. Ms. Slotkin was successful. What does Mike Rogers represent in Michigan? What are his politics?
He's a center-right conservative. He's traditional conservative. So he's pretty much what he's always been. Very commonsensical, very practical. He's running an ad right now saying that he voted against the Wall Street bailout and voted to support the auto industry, which strikes me as the epitome of common sense, because I was right there doing the same thing. So, again, it's very hard for me to look at Mike Rogers in any kind of, he's certainly not a radical, he's certainly not an extremist. He's a traditional conservative Republican. And I think that the MAGA people should be more than happy to vote for him. But we'll see. I think that was part of the problem last time, is that is that Trump won Michigan by 100,000 votes, and yet Mike Rogers lost by 14,000. So I think there was some drop-off amongst the MAGA people, and I hope that does not happen this time.
His opponent appears to be controversial from the outside, Dr. Al-Sayed, mm-hmm. a man who has associated himself with the DSA while asserting that he is not Democratic Socialist of America. Mm-hmm. Many of his policy solutions resemble the DSA very closely. And it would strike me that the Michigan voter would be suspect. But the tariff decision, I want to puzzle about that. Does that cost Michigan money? Can you demonstrate that right now?
Well, you can't demonstrate it till it happens, John, but you would say that if there's a loss of trade or reduction of trade between Canada and the United States, it's going to directly and negatively impact Michigan. That's just historically been the case. So it's going to happen if this continues on where the Canadians retaliate, the U.S. retaliates. Michigan, it's the largest trading partner with Michigan. We've built another bridge, the Gordie Howe Bridge, that goes from Windsor into Detroit. In addition to the Ambassador Bridge, we have a tunnel here in Detroit. You have two bridges in Port Huron. So, I mean, it's got the Peace Bridge up in the Sault Ste. Marie. So we do a lot of business with Canada, John. Lot of business.
We're going to turn to the House of Representatives next because I need to understand how the thinking is for big parties. The two big parties are this close into the midterm with this big of a blow. That is McCutter, American Greatness. I'm John Batchelor. I'm John Batchelor with Thaddeus McCotter. We're talking about the decision by the Trump administration to open a trade conflict, trade war was some description, this close into the midterm. We've discussed the Senate race, and those Senate races can be determinative of the majority. Now, in the House of Representatives, there's a completely different understanding. The majority is very thin for the Republicans now, and the presumption in a midterm is that the House will go the way opposite to the incumbent in the White House. That's a presumption. It's not a rule, however. It's an observation. And I'm told, Thaddeus, that there are only 15 purple seats, meaning seats that could swing both ways. So even though you could say this is a wave election, it's very unlikely that it'll demonstrate it. The issues between the parties are pretty obviously large, except for this tariffs decision. I can't believe the Democrats could ever support it. Why would they want to? But at the same time, must the Republican House support it or else, or the National Committee won't give them money? How is it being presented to the Republicans in the incumbents and candidates already?
Well, how do you mean presented? I'm not quite sure what you mean by that.
What are they to do? If they speak for the
tariffs, they either support it, which would be suicidal, or they oppose it. Most of them will not support it. You know, there's certainly not going to be any legislation about it that gets through the House. So they're just saddled with it, much like the Senate candidates, and they have to fight their way through it. And it's going to be unfortunate because as every day goes by, the consequences of it could manifest themselves. And in an election where affordability / the economy is the number one issue, it's certainly not going to help them. So when they run, the Republican, the National Republican Congressional Committee is certainly going to support their swing seats. It has nothing to do with the president. It's a House caucus that raises the money, contributes the money, and gives it out to members. So they want to hold their majority. So they're not going to sit there and say, well, Bob doesn't like what the president's doing on tariffs, so we're going to lose that seat. And hey, that's not how that works.
Do you understand at this point that they have a plan B?
What would be the plan B?
Plan B would be to attack.
To lose. There's plan A, which is win, and there's plan B, which is lose. Individual members are going to do what individual members are going to do. There's no set piece for them to follow. They're either going to do what they're going to do what is in their best political interest.
Would attacking the tariffs be logical?
If you're in a seat where that's a winning issue, they will attack the tariffs. If they're in a seat where somehow they become a benefit to them, they will support the tariffs. It's politics.
Yes.
The theory that the president will dictate everything to everyone, be they Republican or Democrat, we have three separate branches, and especially during election time, the survival instinct kicks in, and you see the division of the branches pretty clearly.
At this point, what is your observation? Is everybody's in the back room figuring out a strategy, or have they tipped their hand which way they're going to go? The Republicans, I mean.
Well, I would think that Susan Collins has certainly shown what she believes to be the case in terms of the policy. She opposes it. She believes it's not going to help her. And I don't think that Mike or any of the other ones are going to be behind this either. And especially in those seats, it just doesn't make any sense. And I don't know that anybody in Michigan or Maine or even Alaska has run on these huge tariffs on Canada. Have they? Not to my knowledge.
No, not to. This is unprecedented, that wonderful word. And the White House, certainly the political directors there must know that they've put Michigan, Maine, and Alaska at risk in the Senate and given a huge advantage to al-Sayed, but all the House candidates. They must know that this is the White House, and I'm presuming they don't care. We have
why must they know this, John?
Because we know it. We know it.
that doesn't. I don't measure them by what we know. I measure them by what they don't know, or how their behavior and actions manifest themselves in terms of what knowledge they may or may not possess. We saw this with the 51st state remark too, didn't we?
Well,
wouldn't they have a much better possibility of coming to a trade accord with a more conservative Canadian government than they would with the Carney government? And yet the 51st state remark was made. You got Carney, and we are where we are today.
What you've then?
I'm sure they must have known that the 51st state remark and such other remarks were going to damage our relationship with Canada, and yet here we are. So I don't know what they do or do not know. I can only measure their deeds, and those aren't going so well.
That is McCotter, American Greatness in the Great State of Michigan. I'm John Batchelor.